She read there that there is actually mentioned one story when Bhagavata Goswami rejected his disciple. When that one had taken pan from Radharani, when Radharani gave to him pan, he took it, but on Ekadashi. And Bhagavata Goswami, when he knows about, he told him, "Oh, you took pan on Ekadashi, you go away from me, I don't like to see you." And Radharani personally approached to Gopalbhata Goswami and she told him, do you think that my mercy is lower than rules and regulations?"
Mm.
And Gopalbhata Goswami told her, "No, your mercy is like perfect,
supreme.
And it's supreme, it cannot be lower." But still, like Ananda Das Babaji, he mentioned, he read there in his book, and he mentions there that sometime spiritual master he put disciple into some difficult situation in order to check him or something. So, but still, it's not clear why. Like, what's the lesson from that story should be derived from this? Story? What's the
it may, he didn't mention the name of that disciple. What is the point of the story? The point is that what we see, that this story, that the Shishya took the prasadi pan of Radharani. That was in his sporti or from a murti? Hindi's so nice, not
smart. Sporty.
Sporty. That's important. Sporty means his during his dhyan, his meditation. So he's meditating on the lila. So what's being said here is the acharya or the bhakta, he has two rupams, two forms, at least basically according to Goswami conception, and later ideas have been added, and that's also possible because a jiva can have so many forms. Baladeva Dibhushan in Govinda Bhashya, he's quoting Chandogya Upanishad, and there it's saying that the jiva, jivatma, he can have 1,020 different forms. So for Mahavishnu to have so many forms as Shiva and Advaita, etc. Like some lineages, they say Vishakha is Raya Ramananda. Some lineages, like one of our branches of our Advaita Parivar, one branch, family, they show and they have that coming down from the Vamshacharyas that Vishakha is Advaitacharya. And if you read in Gaura Bhamadesh Deepika by Srila Kavi Kanarpur Goswami Pad, he's telling identities. This is the Braj Sarup and this is the Gaura Sarup of the different entities, personalities. So then he often uses a phrase in Sanskrit, Kechit, Kechit Uchu, or Kechit Uhu, which means it is the opinion. Some people say it is the opinion. If you read very clearly Gaura Bhamadesh Deepika, you can see many phrases like this, and you can correspond the English translation, which is generally, in this case, not bad, fairly accurate, with the Sanskrit. And so Kechit, sometimes he says, this is the identity. Sometimes he says, it is said that Rai Ramana, says Kechit. In one verse he says, most Vaishnavas say that so-and-so is so-and-so. I don't have a photographic memory, but this idea. But my father says he's so-and-so. So I say he's so-and-so. Because Kavi Karnapur's father is Nityaparishad, Saint Shivananda. And Saint Shivananda, of course, is generally situated in the Niyogapit. Niyogapit in most those lineages that do Yogapit Dhyan, and not all do. but he's there, Saint Shivananda. Or what we say in ISKCON, Shivananda Saint. They do a different way. So this is just like, for example, if you're in the lineage, I'm not sure if it's Nimbark, Parivar, whatever it is, Nimbark Sampradaya, but Swami Haridas, Bunky Bihari. Swami Haridas founded Bunky Bihari. So their lineage, and their acharyas and their disciples, they believe and they accept and they worship that Haridas Thakur is Lalita Sakhi. And then in Gaura-Ganesh Deepika, our Gaudiya Mahajan, Kavi Karnapur, he says that Lalita is Swarup Damodar. Or maybe Swarup Damodar is also Rai Ramanan, is also Vishakha. So it's like, well, wait a minute, who are you? Well, I'm everybody. So this Occidental or Western thinking, it's like in this box or in that box, doesn't work in transcendental matters, whether it's tattva or lila. Lila or tattva. There's not the right, there's not black and white, right and wrong, high and low. There's no dichotomy or dwanda or duality in transcendence, in the transcendental name. Well, the name is all purifying, but why am I not getting purified? So is that false? No. So in transcendence, in which the Indian mind in general, they accept multi-varieties. So the truth is in this box and in that box and in 20 boxes in between both boxes. But we only have two boxes in our mind, right box and left box. Oh, this is this is the and like Indian people, if you say so and so is so and so, okay, and he's also, and then so and so is also, all right, fine, there's no problem. There's unlimited parakoshtas in the spiritual world. There's unlimited areas, parakoshtas. There's unlimited radharanis. This is all described in our Goswami Granthas. There's a Radharani for every. There's a Krishna. It goes to such an extent that there's one Krishna, and of course, Radha, they're always connected. There's one, let's just say Krishna, and it's Parishads, for every single devotee. That's called Mamta. How can every child in Moscow be your child? You have your child, that and your love. You're a mother, you love children, but this is where all love goes here. So he's my Krishna, your Krishna. When people show their Thakurji, they say, look at my Krishna. We don't say, look at the Krishna. We don't say, look at the Krishna. We say, look at my Krishna. See my Giriraj? He's not your Giriraj. He's Radharani's Giriraj. Only Radharani can say, this Giriraj is hers. This is her to Prananath or Praneshri. But she has her Giriraj, but I also have mine. Then Radharani thinks my Krishna. What does Chandravali think? Oh, Krishna belongs to Radharani? No, Krishna's mine. Most of the time. Sometimes she, I mean, there's Tudiya, Mamata, Madhya, many different bhavas within that. Madhur. But this is the beauty of transcendence. It's unlimited. It's unlimited. It's unlimited, and it's limited. God is everywhere, and He's in front of me. So that's the main thing. So back to this point, there's the sadhaka roop and there's the siddha roop. So in sporti, when you're meditating on lila or any kind of meditation, whether you're a beginner, Nartanivritti stage or whatever stage where your ruchi, your taste, I don't say ruchi as a stage of bhakti, but your taste and attraction takes you to them, to Radha and Krishna Yugal and Vrindavan and their Madhura Lila, and that taste is the basis of rag, that labdha, lobe, to be there. So then you're going. So then when you're meditating, or in this person, the shishya, maybe shiksha shishya, I don't recall it, arranger, but this quote-unquote shishya of Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he was in his srupavashta, means absorbed in his spiritual form. Because he's with Radharani, and he got the tumble. He got the tumble, the prasadi that was prepared by Rupa Manjari and given to Lalita, and Lalita gave it to Vishakha, and Vishakha gave it to Radha, and Radha put it directly in Shyam's mouth, and Shyam chewed it, and kept it for some time, and so much she was with Radharani, enjoying the intimacies and of love dalliance. And after some time, then he during those intimate exchanges, then he passed that tumble to Radharani. Then Radharani relished that tumble, and then she winked at her Manjari, and she came and with her hand and put her hand like that, and Radharani just even with that sound. So then that Manjari, it's one thing to remember the taste, but it's another thing to remember the sound and the taste. This is rasa swarana, and this is shabda swarana. Every day we take Giriraj's Mahaprasad, Radharani's, Guru Mahaprasad, Radharani Mahaprasad. And so it is the rasa swarana, my tongue is relishing this Krishna Dara Amritam, the nectar of Krishna's lips. On my own level, I'm relishing, oh, it's good. I don't mean I'm having satipi cars, my hair is standing in it, and I eat half a spoonful and roll on the ground and don't finish. That would be great. But it may take a few lifetimes to get to that stage of, brain. So, but today, I'm there taking, so then on the veranda, there's Kirtan Ras. Harinam Sankirtan, beautiful raga, this young devotee singing, some nice raga, pakka raga, playing, and many levels of that raga. And so my ears are like drinking nectar, and my tongue is drinking nectar. So today, the Mahaprasad was so much double tasty, and double, bliss producing. Mahaprasad always produces bliss. However we can relish bliss according to our adhikar and our development. But today I was like, wow, keep chanting, I'll keep eating. But then how much I can eat? Because I couldn't eat more and I was full and there was still some left. Usually there's none left. So there's some balance, little mix up. So this person in his siddha, Sarupavesh, absorbed in the siddhadeya, he got this. And he took it. And that's what you said, right? Sporty. It says sporty. So then you're saying that after he came and told that, you sure said sporty, because this is a key point. Does she know the difference between sporty and morty? He took Didi Prasad, or because frankly speaking, it doesn't make sense to me. Absorption and Radha and Krishna's Leela. It's all like whether you bite the glajman from any side, you get the same sweetness. Important detail, because every question has a specific answer. So the phrasing of the question is important. In the first canto of Bhagavatam, when Parikshit was sitting there, Sutta Goswami, he asked very particular questions, exact questions. Anyway, so now the scenario changes that this person is in sadaka roop, he's chewing maha prasadi pan from some Radharani Thakurani in Vrindavan. He approaches Gopal Bhatta Goswami, and Gopal Bhatta Goswami sees him chewing that pan, and then he chastised him and said, "You go." Because the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, generally, at least this is what my guru taught me, we don't take the prasadi pan of the Lord. And I haven't seen written in Goswami books that it's okay to take the pan of the Lord. My Gurudev said that if someone offers it, we go to the temple, they offer the tumble pan, we touch it to our forehead. He said you can open it, and you can, if there's some piece of coconut, with coconut and betel, maybe look the same, but maybe there's a raisin, kishmish inside, or maybe even to close it, there's a piece of long, clove, long, that spice, when you make tumble,
clove,
it's called clove, C-L-O-V-E, It's very fragrant. And when they close it, it's like a pin, little pointed thing with a little cap on it, a little crown on it. Looks very, very cute. Everything Krishna creates is beautiful. You know, you're going to look at a piece of clove and like, wow, what a master creator. Or look at a butterfly, anything is beautiful, from an ant to anything. So, like, take this and then you can eat that. But to come up to the Gurudev, you know, big water apart, and it's very clear that you're chewing, because the more you chew, the more relish comes, you know? Like, you just take your food and throw it in your stomach, how you can taste? You know? You're supposed to chew, you know, so many times also for digestion. So he was teaching, he said, listen, you know, you should set all devotees are like examples. They're examples. So their achar, and their prachar must be somewhat parallel, like the tracks of a train. If one track is missing, the train is going nicely, but one track is taken out, then the train goes cracked. You know, regular train, two tracks, not the monorail type, two tracks, Indian train. You're going along, and someone took out one rail, then the train just goes out. So Bhakti Bhajan is like, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was glorifying Lord Chaitanya's teachings. He said, Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga. He said, Bhakti is love? Why all this Vairagya Vidya Bhakti Yoga? He says the basis of Bhakti brings knowledge, of course, and detachment. Automatically, that's in first canto. But at the same time, we have to develop, and we're thirsty, and that's part of developing, is Shravanam Kirtanam, to hear the Bhakti Vigyan, hear the Bhakti Gyan, the knowledge and tattvas about Krishna. It's also a seva. So we hear and develop knowledge. Vairagi Vidya, Nija Bhakti. Nija Bhakti, Nija means, this is your, he's looking at Lord Chaitanya, he's Lord Chaitanya, this is Nija Bhakti Yoga. This is the kind of Bhakti Yoga you taught. Because there are many, many people, especially today, and that's why this verse is there, by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Because there's many people today, and even practically even then, 500 years ago, because bhakti is ancient, eternal. It's not. There's no time in the beginning, it's eternal. That practice bhakti, but it's not much, not too much detachment, and not, it doesn't appear to be based on any kind of knowledge or shastras. I'm a bhakta, and these are my gopis. You know, and these are my astasakis. My name is Shyam. And we have Rasleela. So there's something good there, because they're imitating Radha and Krishna, but it's not based on Shastra. It's not based on knowledge, and there's no Vairagya. So it doesn't, it takes a long time to get anywhere following that type of path. It creates some samskaras, obviously, for the transcendental objective, but it certainly delays your progress towards in solid way. So therefore, knowledge and detachment are required, even at bhakti. So now he's relishing and enjoying that pan, and is against our shastras. I should quote, so I can't quote right on my mind, so I shouldn't say that. But generally what I've understood, at least I can say what I received directly from my guru's mouth, because I asked him the question myself, only recently, and he told me the same. I know many Gaudiyas that they take the pan of the deities, apparently Gopal Bhatta Goswami, if that story you quoted is correct, I can't verify it, who was there, but it comes down. And I'm not clear exactly on the teaching, it's just my idea that he chastised him and sent him away for some time, short time, just to teach him that we shouldn't do this, and as an example for others. Now, if you go deeper into the matter of this particular individual, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, then you see that he's the Sampat, what do you call it? He establish the worship and the manifest prakat, the manifestation of Sri Radharamanji. And all the Goswamis that worship there, I believe they all, I may be mistaken, but I believe they honor and eat Radharaman's pan. So they, of course, they also go to Vaishnavas, but they're also Brijvasis, and so it's not clear. Basically, when it comes down, and there's many varieties, like I said, so it's a little perplexing to me how that same Gopal Bhatta mentioned to this person it's not good to chew the pan, according to the story you quoted, and yet in his own lineage, I believe that because they do offer a correspond. So then when these kind of fine points, that's why I can't remember the verse now, but I don't know if it's in Bhagavatam or CC. It says, the Bhagavatam may be there, and commentaries may be there, but without Guru, you can't understand. Even there's the Bhagavatam, has 11 commentaries, that means explanations on each verse, okay? By 11 different gurus. And you read them, so much nice, many stories and rasa, and most all of those tikkas are analyzing all the Sanskrit grammar. This word can be broken, kate chit, it can, achit, it can become achaitan, you know, they break it half here, half there, you know, that Shishupala is saying, oh Krishna, you're Adam, Nara Adam, you're the lowest among men. Shishupala said, there's an example of the tikkas. Krishna, you're, when Shishupal was vilifying Krishnaji in Hastinapur, he said, oh Krishna, why is he being picked for the Agra Puja and the Rajasiya sacrifice? He's the lowest of men. What is this? We're all Kshatriyas, we're illustrious, exalted persons, and he's, what is he? Lowest among men. He's Narada. But then it says, that the people give the acharyas, Vaishnava acharyas, they say he's not Nara, because Nara means man, and Adam means low place. So he said, it means Naradam, it means you're the one who sends all men to a lower place. So the same word which is condemning and criticizing and offending Krishna, if it's same Sanskrit, if it's just broken a different way, Naradam, then it becomes a glorification and a praise. This is the amazing beauty and feature of Sanskrit. So that most of the tikkas are explaining this. So, therefore, we read that, we say, oh, what's going on here? What do I? So many tikkas. Then, Gurudev, what does it mean? So that's the final word, Guru. You finally search and you surrender to your Sadguru, and he's a Tattvajnani. It says in Hari Bhakti Vilas, number 2, it says the quality of the Guru, the Lakshana, Guru Lakshana, said, Sarvashastravit. Sarvashastravit, and all these things, that he's very expert in all the Shastras. And he's, so then you have faith that he knows everything, and he's fixed on the highest plane of devotion, Brahmanishtam, and if I just surrender to him and serve him, he'll remove all my doubts, answer all my questions, and I follow his lotus feet to Radha and Krishna. My guru, like sometimes they say, my guru may be right, he may be wrong, he's always right. When it comes down to exactly fine points of this, because it can be abused, this statement I just said, then they quote the verse from the 10th canto, chapter 33, maybe verse 39 or so, because King Parikshit asked Shukadeva Goswami, after he's telling the whole Rasa Lila is completed, and then he says, how is it that Krishna came to establish Dharma, Yada Yada Ridamasya, and all these things, and he's Bhagavan, he's supposed to establish Dharma, lead people in morality, set the example, like Ram, Mariyar Avatar, but he came and he broke, you just told us at Rasa Lila, and he's doing all intimate love dalliance and enjoyment with all these gopis and other people's wives. How is it? How is it like this? And then he says this verse, Ishvaranam. It starts off with Ishvaranam. I should actually get the book. And maybe it will, so I'll get some fans too. Okay, ready, ready. So this is a verse from the 10th canto, chapters 33, verse 31. Every verse, when you study a verse or look at verses, if you take out one, you have to study them in context, relation to the verse. Look at this verse, but you have to see four or five verses before it and four or five verses after it. And then you can get the full picture. Because if you just take this verse, how did he get to that point? And so it starts, because this is a long answer, and it starts off, the Parikshit asks a question, because if there's an answer, there must be a question. Mm-hmm. So whenever you're reading Bhagavatam, it's full of questions and answers. So you have to trace out the question and understand the question. So I already told you the question that Parikshit was saying, how is it Krishna came to destroy irreligion and establish religion that he himself was breaking all religious principles? He came to establish Dharma and he's breaking all Dharma. That's in verse 26 and 27. And then he says to his guru, O Gurudev, please destroy our doubt, which means my doubt. Shamshayam. Shamshaya. Shamshaya. This word is very much used in Bhagavad Gita. Oh Arjuna, are your doubts now removed? You're enlightened by my statements and your doubts are removed? Is your Shamshaya. And that's one of the characteristics of guru. When you choose a guru, you should choose a guru on the basis of his shabda, his sound vibration, his teaching, his vidya, his knowledge. That's the main thing, and also behavior. But when you hear or when you ask questions, does he answer them and remove your doubts? Krishna's Adi Guru Krishna. And in this case, he has one student, Shishya, named Arjun. Krishna's been teaching for time immemorial. So he's saying, oh my dear student, are your doubts removed? Is it clear? Is it alright? So this is the real guru. He removes the doubts. So Shukadeva is the guru of Parikshit, who's about to die. And every one of us has a guru, and we're all about to die. It was guaranteed he had 7 days. We don't know if we have 7 minutes. So we want to be best assured that we have a guru that can remove our doubts. So he's saying, oh Gurudev, I have doubts about God, about this person you've been talking about for the last 9, 10 cantos. Because in 10th canto there's something like 10,000 verses, or majority of the whole Bhagavatam is like half of it or something. So already thousands and thousands of verses you talked to me and taught me about Krishna and Bhagavan. And now I have doubts about him. You told me about Ram, you told me about Nisringadev, you told me about Vamanadev, you told me about Kapil, you told me all different avatars, Leela avatars and Guna avatars and Yoga avatars and so many forms of Bhagavan. But now when the Bhagavan comes as Krishna, I have some doubts. I didn't have any doubts about Ram, I didn't have any doubts about Nisringadev, Vamanadev, Kapila, all through the Bhagavatam. He never had any doubts about, he didn't say, well, wait a minute, why did Ram, protect Sita, why did, No doubts, no questions. When he comes to Krishna, he finishes the rasa dance, he patiently hears. Then he says, now wait a minute. Everything's been good so far. And I was very quiet, I listened, I didn't want to interrupt your flow, you were relishing nectar, speaking all this rasa, and Krishna said, and the gopis said, and first you mentioned about the Pranaya Gita, and then the Gopi Gita, Pranaya Gita, and then the Gopi Gita, and then you were just relishing all these geets of the gopis speaking to Krishna. So I didn't want to interfere with that. But now your dissertation on Rasa Leela is over, and I feel very thankful. But I have a doubt. Who is this Krishna? How can he do what he did? Why did he do what he did? So then he says, first thing he says, he talks about the whole conception here that he uses in verse 29, 30, and 31. Thirty-two. 33, 34, 35. Well, about 5 or 6 verses of his answer to this question by Parikshit to remove his doubt, Shukadeva Goswami is describing about Ishwaras, the qualities of the Ishwara, the controller. In other words, they have a phrase in English, the king can do no wrong, the king of the country, at least this traditionally. And when they had the kingly days, whatever you call it, when they had those, that type of government, I forget the name of it, autocracy or whatever it's called, royal governments, the king can do no wrong. And if you think he's done something wrong, then you won't think anymore. They'll say, what's your problem? They say, oh, you did this thing wrong. Then you have no head, so you won't speak much more. So the king, because he's the final word. So he's describing here, he says, the status, the position of powerful controllers is never harmed, no matter what they do, by transgressions of morality. Just like fire, a powerful controller, he gives the analogy of fire. First he uses one analogy, fire. Fire burns petrol. Fire burns wood. Fire burns plastic and burns steel. The World Trade Center, WTC, was all steel and cement and glass, and it turned into water. It all melted because the intensity of fire was so hot, propelled by all that jet fuel. The whole building got covered with jet fuel and it just burned down to nothing. That's the power of fire. And then fire burns stool. It burns up the stool and that stool field, it dries it all out and absorbs all the gases, everything, and it evaporates all the filthy urine and everything. But the fire and sun, they never get contaminated. The sun has such power. The sun shines on the stool field and absorbs all the poisons and disease and everything in that stool, and then that whole field becomes pure, but never affects the sun. That's the power of the sun. Because he has that power because he's such a big controller. So first he said, here's an example, the sun. No matter wherever he shines, he shines in a dirty place, he purifies it. He shines in a clean place, he makes it more clean. He shines in the fields, he makes the plants grow. Wherever he appears, it's positive, purifying, pavitram, and it's beneficial. Then he says, if you're not the sun planet, don't try to do that. Oh, the sun purified stool. So I can purify stool. I can, we can't do it. It's impossible. He says, one who's not a great controller should never imitate. Never imitate ruling personalities. That's the first thing he said. If you're not a controller, you're not the Ishvara, then don't try to imitate. Then he gives an example. Because the disciple might say, okay, what's an example of a controller that we can't imitate? Lord Shiva, Rudradev. What did he do to Deva Asura Samudra Mantan, churning the milk ocean to get the nectar of immortality? Then first thing came out was poison. The first thing came out was poison. And whatever comes out, someone has to take it. It's an offering from the milk ocean. No one wanted to take it because they didn't have that power. Indra, Varuna, Chandra, so many gods were there. But they said, we don't have that power. Indra Devi was so powerful. But then they said, what to do? We can't go any further. We have to take everything that comes out, someone has to take it. It's an offering. We have to accept it. So then Shiva said, oh, I can take it. So then he became Nilakant. He drank the poison and his neck became blue. Because when you drink poison, you die and you turn blue. Your whole body, if a human being drinks poison, he's a little whitish and you can see it, or even brown, he's blue-brown or whatever, he becomes blue. So he didn't die, only his neck turned blue. So then he says, he says like this, Lord Shiva, we can't imitate. Then this is the verse I was recalling. This is the one. This is 10:31. 10th chapter, 33rd, 10th canto, 33rd chapter, verse 31. Ishvaranam vacha satyam tateva charitam kvachit tesham yat sap vacha yuktam buddhimams tat samacharet. The statements of God or Krishna's powerful Ishvaras are always true, and the acts they perform are exemplary when consistent with those statements. Therefore, one who is intelligent should carry out their instructions. It's a very important verse. It says, samacharit, buddhi, buddhi man, samacharit. It's talking about vacha, vacha satyam. The words they speak are true. Then it says, achar. The achar kvachit is sometimes different. So now, back to the guru and this point about the tambu. Is that why the final word when you have some confusion or doubt about Shastra or about this story is what your guru says. So what the guru's guru uvacha, the words of guru, we should follow all of his teachings and all of his instructions, and that's what it says here. Because they're our guru, they're a powerful controller, they're the Kripa Shakti Murti, so we follow his teachings, his instructions. That's what it says here. The statements of empowered, what the guru says, that's what it means. Ishvaranam vacha satyam. Very important point. Whatever my guru says is true. Because he's an Ishvara. He's an Ishvara, a controller of his disciples. And he's engaging all the disciples in the service of Parameshwara Sri Krishna and Parameshwari Radha. However, his achar, sometimes he says, the acts they perform, it says they become tateva acharitam. When they do some activity, they're exemplary if those activities are supported by Shastra. You can easily understand this. It's a very important point. So, what is the guru telling me? What's he telling me? Is it in Shastra? Yes. And whatever he says is true, I should follow his instructions. To put it simply, my mother used to have a phrase. She used to say, she didn't know this verse, I don't think so. She used to say, when I grew up, she used to say, do as I say, not as I do. Because I was little, and she was smoking cigarettes, you know, American style. And my big brother started smoking. So I said, I want to too. And my mother slapped me and says, you do what I say, you don't do what he does. And then when I grew up, I didn't really know so much when I was small, I saw that, oh, my mother is a little bit like that.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, diplomat, you know, Johnny the diplomat. And I said, oh, that's what is this? And she said, listen, you do as I say. This is very not good for you. You don't do. So I never did. I followed her. But I could have said, like, but you are. You're doing it. Why can't I? You're drinking an ocean. You're drinking all the poison. Why can I have some too? Nobody said that. None of the demigods said that to Lord Shiva. Oh, wait a minute. How come he gets to drink the poison? We don't get to drink it. He's a controller. We're also a controller. Shiva says, here, help yourself, man. Help yourself. Indra, take some poison. No. You know, it's okay. You can do it. So that's why I use this example. It's an extreme example. So now that's why I said this is a delicate point. It's a very delicate point, especially for Westerners. We can't digest it. That generally the achar and prachar are perfect, but not always. And Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sanatana Goswami, is well aware of the situation that many people speak the tattva. Many Ishvaras, many Gaudiyas or many spiritual teachers, they speak the tattva correctly. But they may not behave quite perfectly.
Very true.
So then he told Haridas Thakur, Thakur Haridas, he said, I'm not so smart with verses and things, I'm a little slow, and with everything, for that matter. But at any rate, it's there, and Chaitanya Charitamrita, he said, he glorified, Sanatana Goswami is glorifying Namacharya Thakur Haridas, Haridas Thakur. He said, you're special, Haridas, because not only do you know the tattva, Nam tattva and Bhakti tattva, and you're speaking, your prachar is very, very good. Your prachar, your speech, your teaching. But your behavior is very good. You sleep hardly any, you don't sleep anything, you're always chanting. And you don't just eat a little Jagannath Prasad from the hand of Gauranga. Very pakka behavior. You are acharya. You are acharya. So then, we expect, especially in Westerners, that you know you have to walk. Everyone has to walk their talk. We don't like corrupt politicians. We don't like cheating boyfriends, or whatever, cheating husbands or cheating wife cheats on us or husband. We don't like because it's not right. It's immoral. It's incorrect. Well and good. So now we bring that into the spiritual circles and we see. Oh, I have my guru. My guru's teachings are pakka. But I see that I've observed, I didn't know in the beginning, but I observed that my guru listens to the radio. And he has a radio there next to his bed or so. And he listens to the BBC News. And then I saw, but because I'm a little mature by Guru's grace and Prabhupada's mercy, I said, okay, no problem with me. Maybe he's listening to Prabhupada, because in Indian radio there's all kinds of Prabhupada on the radio. There's Ramayana recitations, there's BBC News, everything, so many things. Because I didn't really hear that he was listening to the news. But he had a radio. And generally, we don't have a stereotype idea that Guru has a radio. So then we see, I'll get a radio too. So we can't imitate. He's Guru. So this is a very small thing, but it can sometimes be something very big. Sure. The Guru is telling. Give you an example. The Guru is telling me to chant 64 rounds a day. The Guru is telling me to chant 16 rounds a day, like ISKCON they have. But I see that he's preaching, he's managing, he's on the telephone, and he's giving class. And I was his secretary, and I travel with him, and I don't think he chanted 16 rounds a day. Because this particular complaint was brought up against one of the big ISKCON gurus years ago, because I'm 40 years in. Formerly in ISKCON, big famous acharya, one of the original 11, that people have complained to his authorities that they didn't ever see him chanting. But no one really paid much attention because he's a powerful controller and speaks very nicely and everything. The leaders say, so many times this complaint's coming up by God brothers, etc. So on GBC they said, listen, you have to. They made a rule, resolution, whatever, that there's a lot of pressure, a lot of people are saying, you please sit in the temple with a bead bag and show that you're chanting your mala. It was like this. It seems very, if someone is a little bit on the devotional scale, or an Indian person, you may think it's really elementary and quite amazing. So there's a clear example from hometown, at least for the ISKCON people, that because that's an example of this verse, Ishram, the What, I'd like to learn this verse. Very nice. 33. What is it? It's easier in this book. Ishwaranam vacha satyam. Vacha means his words. His words are true. Otherwise, why? His words, his teachings. It says his words are true, and we should follow his teachings, follow his example, when his example corresponds to the teachings he gave us. The Guru said, you should follow four regular principles. Now this is taking it to high level, which sometimes happens in Indian Gurus. In the West, it's unheard of. But this happens, and I'm not condoning it, not encouraging it, but I just wanted to give you an example of the tolerance of the Indian mind in general. So the Guru is teaching very nicely, and this verse is a praman for what I'm saying, 10:33-31. Ishwaranam vacha satyam. He's preaching very nicely, answers all your questions, removes the doubts, but then we see that he may have some relationship with a lady. Mm-hmm. You see in India and different ashrams, I'm not talking about ISKCON, Gaudiya Math or anything, they're very particular, and that's very good, but I just wanted to give you an example. And we say, what is this? No, this is unheard of, this is immoral, and you're right. But is he teaching you that? So that's what the verse is saying. The verse is saying, it says the statements of the empowered servants, the Lord's empowered servants, and it just says Ishwaranam, but it's translated servants. The statements of controllers are always true, and the acts they perform are exemplary. This is 5,000 years ago. Sukadeva is telling. Their activities are exemplary, means achar. We should follow when they are consistent with those statements. Therefore, one who is intelligent should carry out their instructions. Do as the Guru says, not as the Guru does. And it's easier, you know, if the Guru does everything correctly, like Haridas Thakur, and he speaks everything correctly, then it makes it easy. It's easy to get in line. But if the Guru speaks up, if he speaks perfectly, but there's some minor tweak in his behavior, or even major tweak, we should not abandon Guru. We may preach to Guru to get in line. That's whether that book is really written, but this Krishna Bhajanamrita, a book that's attributed to Narahari Chakravarti, he talks about these type of things. And also in Bhakti Sandarbha, when to reject a guru. If the guru is speaking perfect siddhanta, but there's some minor behavior, we should overlook that. But this, forgetting all these transgressions, the keynote here is this. Let's take a very simple thing. The guru is teaching me we should chant, we're Gaudiya Vaishnavas. We must chant Japa Sankhya. Every day we should chant a fixed number of rounds, not 1, 2, 3 today and 1, 2, 5 tomorrow. Every day they set some minimum, 4 rounds a day, 16 rounds, 64, whatever. And so that's his instruction to us. And we can see that instruction is, and then we see his behavior. We say, oh, I see he told us to chant 16 rounds, do Nam Sankhya. But I don't see with my eyes any japa bag. So it doesn't appear that he's doing any japa sankhya. So if he's not doing japa, then I'm not going to do japa. That's not what the verse is saying. You should, if he tells you that the shastras tell us we should do japa sankhya, nana shastra vicharanaki, no, it's not that... Sankhya purvaka nama gana natabi kalava sanikrito. And the Goswami Astakam, Srinivas Acharya is glorifying the Goswami's Sankhya purvaka begin. First thing, Sankhya purvaka nam. Purva, before the first thing they do in the day, Sankhya purvaka nama gana natabi. First they chant the name. Sankhya means counting. It's in the sixth sixth verse of Goswami Astakam. Sankhya Purvaka Namagana Natibi. Gan, first they do japa, then gan, then they sing stotrams and songs about glorifying Radha and Krishna, Gauranga, Guru, Vaishnava, and then they offer so many dandavats to Guru, Holy Dham, Leela Stalis, Vaishnavas, present and past, etc. And then they go on, goes on, Sankhya Purvaka Namagana. And then in this way they're absorbed throughout the day and then conquer eating, sleeping, you know the verses. So this, and I'll give you another analogy that's not here. You go to the doctor, you say, oh doctor, I have the flu and I have a fever and I'm all choked up with mucus. Okay, take this cold medicine and take this, whatever this thing, and two times, morning, noon, twice a day, 5 days. You get five days and you should be good. And your diet, little light, and this, that. So they say, oh, wait a minute. Are you taking this medicine? Now, isn't that absurd? Isn't that ridiculous? You understand? Translator, what's your name? I forget your name. Huh?
Arjuna Krishna.
That's cool. So, Arjuna Krishna. You understand? So, you're sick. And you go to the doctor and he gives you medicine. Then you say, no, I'm not going to take this medicine because you're not taking it. Is that ridiculous? So that's the same thing. We're sick and we go to the guru. Hey, Gurudev, I'm in Maya. I'm full of illusion. I have so much greed in me, so much envy, so much anger, and I don't understand God. I don't understand who I am. Can you give me some medicine? So he gives you Nam Oshadi. Nam is called Oshadi. Oshadi means medicine. Dawa. Nam Dawa. He gives medicine. And Guru is God, Acharya Mam Vijaniyan. That's why I said that we have a phrase, at least in India they have a phrase, and they're good with this. My Guru may be right, my Guru may be wrong, he's always my Guru. They go that far. Even if he says something that doesn't add up, I don't care, he's my Guru. He's God incarnate for me. Because Indians are basically have Shraddha. Somehow Krishna led me to this Guru, I have faith in him, I surrender. My Guru may be wrong, he may be right, he's always right. That's the ultimate.
I have a question.
Yes. But let me finish this analogy. You understand this analogy, Arjuna Krishna?
Yeah.
It's clear, this analogy.
Yeah, but you want to do that.
But the doctor?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous, no?
Yeah, it's ridiculous, yeah.
Sure. Oh, you know, you have your liver's disease. You have to just eat some rock candy and some lemon juice. No fried foods. You should not eat fried foods. Don't eat ghee. And then you say, and you're suffering. Your eyes are yellow. Your eyeballs are yellow, and your skin is yellow. You have jaundice. You're tired. You're sleeping all the time. So you go to the doctor. He says, oh, we have to take this Live 52 medicine and change your diet. Eat steamed green papaya and eat lots of lemon juice and mystery water. Make like lemonade. It's very good. Clean your liver and give you some vitamins and energy also. Cooling. Mystery is cooling, rock candy. And it tells you, so you say, well, wait a minute, what are you eating? Oh, I have kachoris in the morning, and I have deep fried pakoras in the afternoon, and I have puris at night, and I have sweet rice and kheer, and I have a couple gulab jamuns. Hey, wait a minute. Look, I want that diet. You know, I'm not gonna follow what you said. You said, you know, you're not eating steamed papaya. You see, you got it, it's clear? You got it? So, this verse is telling that. So, this is very clear, and it's not that clear right now. And Vishnu's purport, let's see, because I had some discussion with one scholar about this, and this is it. So, now we get back to this question about the tambul and everything, is that somehow Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he gave him some particular, apparently this Shishya, you said, there's no name to that person, the Shishya of Gopal Bhatta Goswami came up to Gopal Bhatta Goswami chewing pan one time. And then Gopal Bhatta chastised him and said, you know, you go from here. Then he said, no, but Gurudev, it's Radharani's pan. So he may say, okay, his brother on his pond, that's nice, but I didn't tell you, our lie, I didn't say you could eat it. So that's why I said that the final word is with Guru. So when I ask the same question to my Guru, what about, I go to different temples, they give some donation, they give me pond, I'd never taken it. And then exactly what he said is this. He said, I told you, take out the raisin. He said, when you get it, you touch it to your forehead, and then you just give it to Goswami Grihi. Because he just said like this. He speaks Hindi, Sanskrit, Bengali, English, all mixed up together sometimes. Mostly English, but usually, goes every which way. So he just said, Goswami Grihi Dedo, or something like that. Goswami Grihi, he said, you give it to the Goswami, the married Goswamis. So you're in Radharaman temple, and one of the Goswamis who are always married, because we're Vairagis. We're Vairagis, we're Babaji's or Sannyasis, and this law is there for ISKCON and Gaudiya Math, and for many Gaudiyas, especially Vairagis, they don't take temples. So my Guru Maharaj, he said like that. And then I said to him, but I see some devotees, of different gurus, they honor the temple. And he said that's between them and their gurus. And then he asked me, he said, are they Vairagis? Are they Babaji's? I said, no, they're just like, Brahmachari. They wear white. Brahmachari, Grihasthas. He said that, anyway, that's something, whatever. But my followers, we don't take. reminds me of one guru I once met in a former institution I was in. And some of his disciples, they asked him, he said, a very clever answer he gave us. It was really Parokshavad. A few of them met and they had some dilemma. They said, Gurudev, can we bathe in Radhakund? Because Prabhupada's books say, they say we should bathe in Radhakund. And he gave his gurus are expert. He said, Gurudev, can we bathe in Radhakund? He said, I don't. And the disciples were like, because it's a little more formal type relationship in some institutions, so they were like little choop. They said, well, I don't. And they were like, okay, Gurudev, that's the final word. So then the disciples drew the conclusion, well, if you don't, then we can't. Which is okay. But the disciple had a little more friendly relationship, which he should have. It's in the seventh canto, it says, Narada Muni is preaching about Brahmachari and Guru. He's talking about Brahmachari Guru, Brahmachari Guru Kule, Vasantanto Guru Hitam. And this applies to everyone, because we're all trying to follow Brahmacharya to our best extent. If we're Grihasthas, we're also trying to be Brahmacharis as much as possible. Vairagis and Brahmacharis, no question, we're always Brahmachari. So he said, Brahmachari Guru Kule, because Guru Kule means a building, the Gurukul, and Gurukul means the family of the Guru. The Parivar. Parivar means family. Wait, the Parivar, and the Parivar, get out of Parivar. So where everyone has a Guru is in the family of the Guru. So the Gurukul, then he says, Vasandantara Guru Hitam. He says that the disciple, he lives for the Guru Hitam. He lives for the benefit of Guru. Vasandanta, he controls his senses. Everyone controls their senses. Every Vaishnava, Gaudiya Vaishnava, this is the first instruction of sense control. Vacho vegam manasakura veram jiva veram rupasta vegam. It doesn't say, suno grihasthas, suno vairagis. This is upadeshamrita, instructions for everyone. The control. So then he says, third line he says, guru sudrida solrida. So Guru Sudrid Sorid Surit Suritsatam. He says that the disciple shall have a very heartly Guru Surit Sorad. Sorad like that. In Sanskrit. So the Surit means Sorid, it means first firmly, very firm and loving, close relationship with his Guru. My Guru is my father. My Guru is my friend. He's my everything from beginning to end. And on and on, because there's no end. We're eternal, and Guru is the same Guru is with us life after life. Take us back. So therefore, another disciple would have said, okay, Gurudev, you don't bathe, but you know, you're Guru. You don't need to bathe. You're pure, and you're pavitram, and you're just meditating on Leela day and night, and whether you bathe or not, it's okay. And you're just absorbed in Namrup Guna Leela Krishna, and you're bathing in your Srupa Vesh. But you know, I'm like your disciple. I'm a Bhatta Jiva, and so it'll be good for me. So can I bathe? But nobody asked that question. They were too fearful because they didn't have the Suvida, you know, Guru Sudrida Sorida. Sudrida Sorida. They didn't have a friendly, loving relationship with the Guru. So, like I asked my Guru, I said, but I see some brahmacharis. And he said, have you ever seen any vairagis? I said, I haven't seen. He said, anyway, vairagis we don't. We means him and me and anybody with him. So that includes me too. So now this is the order of my Guru. Now I meet another Gaudiya Vaishnava. He's a good devotee, he's my friend, and he takes pan or not choose pan, but maybe he gets pan and he takes it. And so do we become critical? Hey, why are you taking pan? We say, okay, you take pan. That's how we say in English, different strokes for different folks. Say your and then you can mildly say in a friendly way, is it your guru is okay? You eat pan? Yeah, he said it's okay. Oh, that's fine. My guru said no. So this is the Indian tolerance. Your guru said you can eat pan and I can't. Okay, fine. I follow my guru. Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chite Te Kori Aikya Arana Koriya Maneyash Maneyash Ash. He's clear, Arjun Baba. Clear what I'm saying?
I don't understand about that point that disciple who got friendly relationship with his guru and he asked the guru, so you...
More elaboration. If you have friendly relation, like, here's look at this example. Three or four disciples went to the guru. They really wanted to know, can we bathe or not? Because some of their older godbrothers, they were initiated way before, they were all bathing.
Yeah.
Because the guru never told them anything about not bathing.
Okay.
So they're bathing. So they were new disciples. And they had heard from their guidances, or whatever you call it, their leaders, bhakti leaders, or whatever they call them, that no, you can't bathe. This is what's being told. So they wanted to clear it with Guru, clear it, remove their doubt with Gurudev. So when they asked, he said, I don't bathe. But that's, you know, like I give an answer, and so the Guru should say, is that clear? Do you understand? Well, Gurudev, I don't understand. I mean, okay, I understand. You don't bathe, and you don't need to bathe. But because they feel some trepidation, mm-hmm. some hesitation, they're fearful. They didn't ask. They said, okay, Guru, Jai Gurudev. Now, Mishmalai. Because they only had one question. When I go to see my Guru, I always have 50 questions. Mm-hmm. It's a long thing, you know, like, you follow what I'm saying?
No, I hope, but still I don't understand that. Yes,
in other words, they did not get a straight answer. You follow?
Yeah, I got it.
The answer is, yes, you can bathe in Radhakund, or no, you can't.
Yeah,
so can I bathe in, Gurudev, can I bathe in Radhakund? You know, whatever.
Yeah. But
so is that clear? And you say, Gurudev, that's not clear, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever, I don't. So then he says, no, you shouldn't. Then you say, okay, Gurudev, I accept that. But, you know, can you explain to me, in Rupa Goswami's Nectar instruction, it says this, this, and that. And Prabhupada writes in his purport that we can bathe, we can bathe, we can bathe. And Prabhupada never edited his book. He never changed his book. It came out in 1975. He entered Nitya Leela in 77. And he author of a book, and every time it's reprinted, he can change it, edit it, improve it. He never changed it. He said, this is the glorification of living on the banks of Radhakund doing bhajan, and this is the perfection and goal of life for the very advanced sadhakas. But the members of my institution, ISKCON, no one should bathe in Radhakund. He did not say that in writing. Just in some small conversation, September 5th in 1976, in a room conversation in Vrindavan, which I included in my Radhakund Mahima Madhuri book in discussing this very principle. This section is called To Bathe or Not to Bathe, which is based on Shakespeare. You got it. You're a well-rounded, learned man. This is Shakespeare. To be or not to be. So I went, to bathe. To bathe. To bathe. Bathe. And then that book came out. Then later, one of my godbrothers published a Prikama book of Radhakund. And he put a whole thing in there about, you know, Prabhupada said we shouldn't bathe. We shouldn't bathe. Prabhupada said, he doesn't quote any Shastra, he just said, Prabhupada said we shouldn't bathe to some devotees. And so therefore, let's follow Prabhupada and not bathe. That's in a famous book by a godbrother, a picture book, Prikama of Radhakund. So I met that godbrother and I said, listen, my dear beloved Guru Bhai, say you die and I die, and your book is out of publication, and my books are out of publication, and no one can read them. If the future devotees, if they only read Prabhupada's books, will they bathe in Radhakund or not? And he said, because, you know, I know about, you know, debating a little bit. So I said, because I want to, you know, if he's not, I want to see the guy honest. He said, they'll bathe. And I said, why? And he said, because in Prabhupada's books it says to bathe. I said, okay, then why did you print a book, which is kind of a solid Praman evidence with so many pictures, which is very influential to devotees, to propagate that we shouldn't bathe, which is against the instructions of your own guru, mm-hmm. and against the teachings of Rupa Goswami and Krishnadas Kaviraj, and because they all talk about bathing, and, sure. and Chaitanya Charitamrita and Lord Chaitanya, so many arguments. And he said, well, Prabhupada also said this.
Oh, that's very specific. It's contextual.
That was just contextual to ten devotees. And he never wrote it in print. And he said, Prabhupada, and he said, so I wanted to show the other side also. And I said, I feel what you did is a disservice. It's a disservice. You're misleading people. Because it's your prerogative, it's your feeling. If Prabhupada felt that way, we should. I told him. I said we should follow Prabhupada, and I don't. And of course, we're not very good friends now. Oh, okay. And I said, I don't think you're following Prabhupada. And he said, no, I'm following Prabhupada. And I said, I disagree. Anyway, that's like. But I won the argument because you know ultimately Prabhupada's books will always be published, and certainly Rupa Goswami's books will be published and read forever. And everywhere in those books it says bathe in Radhakund. So now that was just an example of now when a guru's behavior is exemplary with his teachings, you follow. That's the main point we're discussing about, is that somehow Gopal Bhatta, he didn't think that this was correct because he must have given instructions to him not to take pawn, and he came taking pawn and thinking he would be exonerated because it was Mahaprasadi Pana of Radharani that he got from a Murti of Radharani, a temple deity. So the bottom line here is that many points and many teachings are here. The main line is we should follow the guru, we should follow all the teachings of the guru when they're according to the Shastra. We should follow the guru, all of his teachings are satyam, correct, and we should follow all of his behavior when his behavior is in agreement, his behavior is in agreement with the teachings he gave us.
Sure.
That's basically what it says. They perform acts when they're consistent with those statements. So he's telling us to chant japa, and then we see that he's not chanting japa. So we can say, oh, are his statements, because it says that they should, we should always, it says, therefore one who's intelligent should always carry out their instructions. That's the basic thing. Buddhimans. So we need intelligence to be Krishna Bhakta, to be a spiritualist. You have to have intelligence. So we should use our intelligence to follow the teachings of the guru. What he does, that's between him and Krishna. He's my savior. He's my wisdom teacher. The modern term now is wisdom teacher instead of spiritual master. They say wisdom teacher in English circles. Wisdom teacher. Certainly he's giving the paravidya, the alokik gyan that we need to get liberated and attain prema. It's a little late. Any other questions? We started late, so we usually go 4 to 6. Now we've gone 5 to 7. Must be 7. 6:45. Okay, 15 more minutes. It's dark. You can drive in the dark, okay?
Yeah, we have a lot of lamp on.
You have to be careful. Don't go, because there are many speed bumps.
Yeah.
You're in so much ecstasy from bathing in Radhakund that you may bump off your bike. This is his mom. He lives with his mom. His mom is a pure devotee. He's a pure devotee. This is a phenomenon. Western people, the mother and the grandmother's a devotee and the great grandmother's a devotee. I mean, it goes on like that. I met Russians like four generations. They're all Tila Kantimala. In America, we were lucky to get, and in Europe, we got, you know, one boy, one girl, you know, whatever. You can't even get two brothers, what to speak of, mother, father. Yeah. Unheard of. And that's what Prabhupada is a preacher and a guru and a liberated soul, and still no mothers joined.
Oh, okay.
No fathers joined. Nowhere, nothing, nobody. At least Westerners. Yeah. Indians, many older people, just that. But no, even Prabhupada has some Indian disciples, you know, Lokanath Swami and Gopal Krishna Maharaj, etc., etc. Their mothers and fathers, of course, they're Indians, are already bhaktas, but yeah, that's a whole other thing. They didn't move in the temple, and their father didn't move in and shave up and gentle. But it's a really phenomenon with Russians. That's why I have a lot of respect and amazement that I meet people. It's like, this is my mother and father. Acha, where's she? Oh, we live in Vrindavan. This is my grandfather. He lives in Vrindavan. Amazing. It's amazing to me. It's like I'm so excited about it. That's their sanskars, their Purva sanskars. They're all Indian, you know, Gujaratis or something.
But I have a question on, you know, you made a point that the acha of the guru is not in line, but then his
teaching
is all somewhat.
Teachings are paka and his behavior is kacha.
So the problem with Indian tolerance is that it goes to making godmen, you know, because godmen survive based on that, and that's actually destroying the country. You have many godmen here in India.
Yeah, that's
so because you know whatever they say, whatever you know, whatever the way they behave, it doesn't really matter. It's like
he has
said it, so it's to be followed. So that is that's the flip side of it.
Yeah, it says here that, you know, they take it because they can just say that the statements of the Lord's empowered servants are always true. It says, Ishvaranam Vacha Satyam. Now, if someone, well, that's not correct, empowered, this is a little bit, the Ishvaras. Ishvara Vacha Satyam. The words of powerful people are true. So if the powerful person is a guru, his words are true. But what makes him guru is that his instructions, guru shastra vakya, the gurus, his teachings are in the shastra. He tells me to chant 16 rounds through japa sankhya. Is that in the shastra? That Vaishnavas should do japa sankhya? Yes. So if that instruction satyam? It's true. But if he tells me that, you know, I'm enjoying, you know, whiskey, so you also enjoy.
That's
you know, so if he's ordering the disciples to do something that is immoral or against scriptures, we don't follow that. That's why he says one who's intelligent should carry out their instructions. So we do whatever the guru says if it's based on shastra. But if he says something that is not in shastra and it's incorrect, then we don't follow it. Now that's one point. Now we carry all his instructions, and if his behavior is, he said their acts are exemplary. Exemplary means an example. Whatever the guru does is an example which we should follow if if it's consistent with the Shastra. You follow? He's saying like this, and then Shastras are saying like this. For example, some institutions, they say, you should follow the four regulative principles. No coffee or tea. So, I asked my Gurudev about coffee or tea. And I see many sadhus, and even some Gaudiyas occasionally here or there, drink one or the two. And he said, coffee or tea is nasha. Nasha, I think, means
intoxication.
Yeah, and my Guru is a Vidvan and Vyakar and Vaishnav, Darshan, Tirth, and so much knowledgeable and decorated with degrees and learned. He said that coffee and tea are nasha, which means intoxication. And then I said, this is one phrase, it's so cute. Jai Ho Chandrama, it's Purnima tonight. It started at 9 o'clock. Yeah. Tonight is Purnima. Chandrama ki jai. So then because I have this kind of relationship with my Gurudev, it's like we're friends. He's God, he's my God, he's everything, but he's my father. You can freely talk to your father. You can freely talk to your father, at least I would hope so, and your family. So it should be a free dialogue with the Guru. Loving, compassionate, you should feel comfortable with your Guru. Happy to be in his benign presence. So I said, so of course I don't take off your tea, but just to explore the topic. I said, Gurudev, I've seen some Gaudiyas, even Vairagis, that sometimes they drink some, looks like they're drinking tea, and regular tea. Even I see sitting in a tea stall in a Radhakund, Prickamore. And when I said about tea, first he said, in the winter I get some cough, should I take some cinnamon tea, some cinnamon ginger tea, or some herbal tea? No, not this green black tea, whatever. And then that point was clear. So we can take that type of tea, cinnamon or you know, some kind of not green tea, which is very popular and good for hearts or something like that. And then black tea and all these other teas. So then I said, well, I saw some, you know, seems like Vairagis apparently drinking tea. And then he said, I'll let them do. This is a phrase. He moves his hand like this. Let them do. But we don't do. Let them do, because I was talking about some Radhakund, and he stays at Govindakund. So he's on the Govindakund cricket team, and this is the Radhakund cricket team. So I said, I don't know, it seems that I think they're Babaji's. I want to speak of that. I've seen even sannyasis, some Gaudiya sannyasis, and different, they drink some tea. So, or for example, I know disciples of some Gaudiya sannyasis, and they drink tea. I've seen that, from other institutions other than this kind. So these kind of things. So that what I'm saying is, in one institution they say you have to follow. We have four principles, but when you go, if you go other places to take initiation, the Guru doesn't even mention these things. There's no, as far as I've heard and seen, when you meet a Guru, a Gaudiya Vaishnava Guru, outside of, I don't know about even Gaudiya Math if they have those four regular principles, but the Guru assumes that you're serious in spiritual life. And in Hari Bhakti Vilas, it says that the Guru should study the nature of the Shishya for 1 year if he's a Brahmin. By birth, he's a Brahmin, Varna, or Kshatriya. If he's a lower Varna, he should study for 3 years. Sometimes gurus are Kripalu and are very merciful. But he should study the behavior and situation of the disciple, and the guru disciple should study the guru a minimum of 1 year. It's in Hari Bhakti Vilas number 2, quality, Guru, Shishya, Diksha, etc. So then after the Guru knows the disciple for a year or so, then he has a general idea of his behavior, his svabhav, and his character. And what I see, most gurus, they want the disciple to be a vegetarian. And like, there's no onions and garlic. That's also nasha. But even in sometimes disciples are eating onions and garlic. There's a lot of varieties, what I'm saying. So these are all like the minor things.
And Maharaji, even...
You have to follow the guru, that's the bottom
investing
line.
Investing in shares, that's gambling. And if you go to the CP side, be it ISKCON or any other institution, everybody is playing in the secondary market. And they are putting tilak and they have congregations. So this is all nonsense. I mean, it's absolute nonsense. I come from such a background actually, because I've been with them because...
I don't know that much about that.
It's all pretty bad in the city. And a lot of atrocities happening in the name of ISKCON. So it's like...
Yeah, well, I don't want to mention any particular institutions. Because this is being recorded. I think that every institution has its value and its contribution to make. So we shouldn't... Everyone should find their way and find their guru and follow their guru the best they can and try to go in bhakti. If something doesn't work out and you go somewhere to some new position, then you carry on over there.
Mm-hmm.
But what's past? I have a phrase in one of my books, a little book of small English things. What was is past, what is won't last. At all times be steadfast, chant Hare Krishna and have a blast. I have two little small books, books like this, called Sweet Notes in English. I have just some fun little, like these kind of things. light reading. So, wherever we were, we were always grateful. We're grateful to our mother, our father, any teachers. We're always respectful, grateful, and this is the best way to be. Not that this is bad or that's bad. Everything is good in its own way, for its own purpose. But find your own goodness. Every individual should find their own goodness in life. They're good people, and their good path, and their good vibrations, and their good teachings, and be situated there. Because the heart should be peaceful. Be at peace. If you have a good thing, just go deep into the good thing. That's your fortune. If we had misfortune in life, and we finally found fortune, then there's no limitation. This is a type of lamenting. Nasochiti nakankshati, you know, the Bhagavad Gita. Samasarveshu bhuteshu. What is that verse? I forget. There's the verse Nasochiti nakankshati. Don't hanker and don't lament. If you're properly situated, you don't have to hanker. Just if you have proper guru, you have Radha and Krishna. You don't have to hanker.
There's no limitation. Absolutely not.
Yeah, just be
free flowing.
Madharam samapaya. Try for harmony. Always try to find the harmony in things. This is one of my Shiksha gurus has always stressed this point of harmony. Seek for the essence in all the things. There's good everywhere. We should look for the good. Yeah? You have a last question?
Last question, Shikas. About from the same book, Vilapa
Kusumanjali. Oh, yeah, Vilapa Kusumanjali.
Yeah, sure.
You're really picking a high book to discuss because, you know, of course, we've read it with the tikas of Srila Anantadas and Babaji Maharaj, which are also mixed with the tikas of our Advaitacharya, Vamsacharya, Prabhupada Ananda Gopal Goswami, also there, and all together. And a very high book and full of deep instruction. So I'm not too qualified to speak. And fortunately, there's those commentaries of Srila Anantadas all together. So anyway, what's your question?
Well,
this is the postgraduate book of of bhajan for the Raghunuga Bhaktas that are situated. Raghunuga Bhaktas are situated in Siddha Pranali and deeply following Rag Marg. This is their Bible. Stavavali, Stavavali, Stavavali by Raghunath Das Goswami especially. And so Mandri Bhav and Seva Vrata. Of all books, this is the premier book. And then the Stavavali. Even Stavamala is nice, but it's not fixed exactly perfectly on the point of Mandri Bhav and Mandri Upasana Seva. And Vilapakusa Mandri is one poem from Stavavali. Stavavali, of course, is a bunch of stavas.
Stavavali is quite big.
Many stavas. And Baba has commented on the whole Stavavali. It's in different parts. Actually, I think he publishes part two. Part two of Stavavali, he calls Vilapakusa Mandri.
Mm-hmm.
That's part two. Then part one, like that, there's four parts altogether.
It's quite big.
Yeah. So what's the question?
We
can read it, you know, anyone has thirst and desire can read it and read the commentaries and pray and Das Goswami and Tulsi Mandri and the Acharyas comment, the Acharyas that are giving comments, we pray to them at the lotus feet. For mercy, we can enter into something, understand something, but ultimately have the Adhikar. We have to have some preliminary qualification. You know, Sharanagati at the feet of a Raghunugiya Bhakta who's living this book and breathing this book. And there are individuals like that. We would hope to be one someday. But we're just beginning, beginners on the path. But so what's the question? That being said,
he mentions there that
like the person who wrote the commentaries, he would be the ideal person to ask the question to.
But anyway, maybe your point will be useful for her, of course.
Yeah.
That he mentions there that if compassion toward another soul might be some like a hindrance. For Raghunuga path, it should be rejected. So what did he mean? Like if compassion might be like a hindrance in your Raga Bhakti, it's
nice to see the whole book. Because even the tikkas, I mean, first of all, that statement is some type of realization, understanding that Acharya has based on that particular verse. You get some indication. And comes up with this idea, or this previous Acharya is Prabhananda Gopal Goswami. So that we have to see the whole thing together. But there is a principle in Raghunuga Bhakti of Sankalpa Vikalpa. Sankalpa Vikalpa means accepting what is favorable. Anukulyasya Sankalpa, Pratikulyasya Varjanam. There's six symptoms of surrender in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Accept everything favorable. Reject everything unfavorable. Always feel that Krishna is my maintainer, protector, etc. And surrender everything and humility, dependence, all these six things. So Sankalpa Vikalpa. So what's favorable for Raghunuga Bhakti, and that's explained in Rag Vartman Chandrika, there's different types of five different aspects of Raghunuga practice. Bhav Anukulya, it's called Bhav Anukulya, Bhav Pratikulya, Bhav Sambandhi. This is it'd be very good for her, it's in English also by Bhava, if she doesn't have to read, if you have read, Rag Vartman Chandrika, because the answer to this question is this book. And these five things I'm describing. Because he's saying that some things are against Bhav Vivrudha, or whatever it's called, Bhav Vivrudha, I think. Vivrud, Viroj, Vivrud, Viroj, it means against. They're against my rag. I'm trying to develop attachment to Karunamayi Radha as her kinkari, as her maidservant. So I want to focus all my attention on her I want to receive her karuna, her compassion. But if I'm busy being compassionate and spending time, you know, helping others or helping so many people and distributing food or clothes or tutoring some Brijbasi boys in English because they want to learn English, and that would be a show of human compassion, because many people have asked me to do that. And I said, I'm sorry, I don't know very good English. If I'm from America, you better ask someone that knows English, you know. So I said, I'm really busy. So I think I would believe that's what he's saying, incorporating these concepts together, that Bhav Viru, that is, he's saying that one who wants to fix his mind in the rag and developing Raghunuga Bhakti, then showing compassion for others may be an impediment. I would venture that this could be what he's saying, that it's an impediment. It's not an impediment to be compassionate. But if you're spending time, I want to be compassionate, I want to, you know, go and help the suffering, then that's taking away time for your rag bhajan. Because if you've been initiated, because he's talking about Raghunuga Bhakti, so if you've been initiated by a Raghunugiya Bhakta who's instructing you on the path of Raghunuga Bhakti, then that expression of compassion is outside the order of the Guru. Because in order to express that compassion to others, you require time and space. You have to take time away from the Guru's order to do your rag bhajan and express your compassion. I believe that's what he's saying.
So let me
just see the finish, because there's so many translations going back. First it goes one way, then comes out the other way. So is that okay? That's why I was saying earlier, I don't know the verse, I should find it, that you have the books and you have the tikkas and you still don't understand. That's a clear example, right? The book is there, and there's a statement. Okay, I have the book, I read the verse, and I read the commentaries, but I don't understand the verse, or I don't understand the commentary. So now what? So then you ask a teacher, Shiksha Guru, God sister, God brother, whomever. Yes?
Yeah, but if you show compassion to Brijbasis with the bhav that, rather than, I hope you're pleased with me, you know, with that intention. So, I mean, that sort of develops the mood, right?
Yeah, well, this is... Now things get little, you know, get hair splicing here. We're talking about compassion as a general quality being expressed anywhere at any time. Now we're talking about Vrindavan. So there's one type of tattva in a dham, and there's one type of tattva outside the dham. I'll give you an example. Prabhupada was in Vrindavan giving a class in 1976 on a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. 7th canto or 10th canto? Maybe I have this verse book. Maybe I can find it. This verse says, Boma Ijidi, Gokaraha. Boma Ijidi Gokaraha. The basic idea is this from Bhagavatam. If someone is attached, Boma Ijidi, if someone is attached to their place of birth, where they were born, St. Petersburg, you know, Delhi, whatever, they're attached to their place of birth, and they consider that place Boma Ijya. Ijya means worshipable. Ijya D. That's their thinking, D. Then they are no different than a cow or an ass. Gokara. Kara. They're no different than a cow or an ass. So now in the audience was Prabhupada's disciple, my god brother, Krishna Balaram Das, who later left Iskani, has his own mission, he's sannyasi. Whatever. So he said, "Oh, Prabhupada, you said that to be attached to our place of birth and to glorify it, it's Maya, and we're like we have the brain of an ass or a cow if we're attached to Ukraine or Delhi or whatever, Calcutta or you know whatever. So you know I have to admit to you in all confidence that I'm attached to my place of birth." And you know, you're saying that's bad. And then he said, where are you born? He said, where were you born? He said, I'm born in Nandagram. I'm born in Vrindavan. And I'm very attached to Vrindavan. And my father raised me that we should pray to Radharani that we can take birth in Vrindavan, birth after birth, you know. Because for us, Vrindavan, you know, for us Brijbasis, whether we're born here or there, it's the same. Boma Vrindavan Goloka, we don't even care. And I'll prove this point, how Brijbasis, at least traditionally in the village, what I've seen is, there's Shastra Niyam, and then there's Shastra Vichar, and there's Bhav Vichar. So Ragmarg is based on Shastra Vichar and Bayam, fear of God, the wrath of God, because there's no attachment. When there's attachment to God, when you're attached to somebody, when you're attached to someone and you love them and have faith in them, then you can depend on them. So you're attached to your wife and or your husband, and you have love for them, and then you can always depend on them. So Raghunugiya Bhakta, he's fully attached to Krishna out of rag and out of love, different degrees of love. And he's fully attached and cultivating his attachment, and he has faith in Krishna. So he's not afraid of anything, because he knows that when I die, Krishna will take care of him. So the Brijbasis, Prabhupada says in one purport, and it's in my Appreciating Vrindavan book, in my chapter about Brijbasis or something like that. He writes there, it's very nice, because very few times in all Prabhupada's books he uses this word in his purport, from his own purport. Some CC shlokas is there. He says that the residents of this Vrindavan today, it's very difficult to understand the residents of Vrindavan, because they're all on the path of Raghunuga. He said all the Brijbasis are on the path of Raghunuga. This is Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada. So very difficult to understand them. So they're all on the path of Raghunuga. So the Rag Bhakti is based on this rag. So then when the disciple said, Prabhupada, I'm very attached to Vrindavan. Oh, I was making the point of dying. In the Shastras, if you follow the Shastras, you're afraid, if you're a Vaidhi Bhakta, you're afraid, I'm following a Shastra, if I don't do this, I'm going to get punished by God, or He won't let me remember Him at the time of death. So the Shastras say, when you're dead, it's called Antyasti, whatever it's called, something like Anyasti Samskar or Adyasti, you know, the cremation. According to the Niyam, they make the funeral pyre, the wood. And they put the body there. And the Niyam means the rule, the law. You're lying on your back. And you're looking up. And they rub your body with a bunch of ghee and put blocks of wood and sprinkle all kinds of camphor so you really, especially if you're skinny, if you're fat, they don't do much because you get fat. Don't waste the camphor. Because if fat, you'll get fired up real fast. But if you're skinny, there's all bones. They put a bunch of camphor and then all the straw and everything in it. Because I've seen a few of these samskaras. In fact, I was asked to put the torch on the shamshan of Sri Indra. We're all standing there, and Rupa Raghunath Das, he knew about these things, because he would take care of so many old people and whatever. And Mukunda Datta, they were there, and they know about these rituals and rites. And where everyone's there, Kirtan, we came down with his body and everything. And everyone's crying, including me. And then the most senior person there is supposed to do this. And I was, was not like that. I was sannyasa. So they, and a friend, so they gave me, he said, here, you start lighting. And then I started, and then Rupa Raghunath, So everyone's lying like this, and that you'll see. But Brijbasis, at least the ones I know, and this is what they tell me, when they get burned, usually you're burned on wood, mostly wood. Brijbasis, this is the villagers, and I think maybe the Babaji's also follow, I can't say, probably they do. They're burned on cow dung, like 400 patties or whatever it takes, cow dung, which is not in the Shastras. Usually it says, you know, wood, certain like wood. And the main point is they're not lying face up, they lie face down. Why? Because they want to come back to Braj. They're looking at Braj Bhumi, Braj Duli. I mean they're dead. Okay, they're already left the body basically, but I know. But this is the Bhavichar. The body is upside down, looking at the Braj Raj. Yeah. Otherwise you're looking up, I want Vaikuntha Prapti, I want Swarga Mukti, I want to go up there, I want to go, you know, become a Brahmin instead of a Shudra, I want, you know, whatever. I want to go up. I want to go up socially. I want to go up in better varna. I know I can't get mukti, but better varna. I want to go up. But they want to come down the Braj. So that's one side point. Beautiful one also. And then Prabhupada's answer was, you're born in Nandagram. It's very good to be attached to your place of birth.
Just believe it.
So this question, what was the question? Because it reminded me of this point. Question was
compassion.
Yeah, compassion. Thank you. It was your question. I'm still stuck on this thing about Vilaka. Compassion. So to show compassion, the question is, what about showing the Acharya is saying in his Tika, Vilaka Samanjali, that to show compassion to other people may be a disturbance in Rag Bhajan, so we should not do it much. And then the question, well, what about showing compassion to Brijbasis? So this, again, this is a different category. Just like you're born outside of, that's why I gave you these, it's a different category. And Brijbasis die face down. Everybody in the entire world, every Hindu that's burned is face up. Even in Yamuna and everyone I saw there. So that's something different. That's their Bhav, because they're Brijbasis. And I cited the example there in Rag Marg. We're not. So now showing compassion to anybody else is a disturbance in Rag Bhajan. But showing compassion to Brijbasis is a contribution to Rag Bhajan. It's a contribution to your Rag. Because we want the Raganuga that the Brijbasis have, which Prabhupada said they have in the purport. Yes. See how it comes full circle?
That's what it comes full circle.
Serve
them.
Why do we do Madhukari? Because we want their compassion. Okay. Why did Sanatan Goswami and Bhakti Ratnakar? You can read in Bhakti Ratnakar and other biographies that he was famous for chit-chatting. Saying, oh, Acha, Mr. Singh, how is there? He comes to Baitan, Chota Baitan, and near Nandagam side. And they stayed 2 days there. Sanatan Goswami is the only village he stayed 2 days in because they just loved him so much and they demanded he stayed. He didn't spend 2 days there giving Bhagavad Sapta, giving Harikata, telling all the verses from Brihad Bhagavatamritam. He just was with them. And doing reading palms and doing horoscopes, blessing children to succeed in school, and giving some Ayurvedic formulas because he's a learned person, an experienced person, giving some financial advice and advising about the crops, solving out family problems, and that he's glorified throughout history as being showing compassion to the Brijvasis. He's the Mother Teresa of Vrindavan. Sanatan Goswami has an interesting statement. He's the Mother Teresa for the Brijbasis. So much he's the Mother Teresa. He showed so much compassion, so much love, and he didn't initiate any of them. He didn't initiate one of them. It's not that Guru showed, my Guru is so compassionate to me. My Guru shows so much love to me. So he's everything for me, and your Guru is everything for you. There's no one more compassionate than Guru. He's Radharani Shakti. He's Kripa Shakti Murti. Kripa Shakti. Kripa means Karuna. Karuna means Radharani. Kali Kaleder Dharma. Krishna Nam Sankirtan. Krishna Shakti Bini Nahi. Tara Pravartan. It says, without Krishna Shakti, you can't establish Sankirtan. Sankirtan means the collective glorification of Krishna. Samkirti. It can mean going out with Mardanga, that, but it can mean, like, for example, there's one Acharya here in Radhakund, and Kartik, he sits in the lecture hall, and 2,500 people sit in front of him. He doesn't pick up a Mardanga and sing any Hare Krishna Kirtan, but he speaks every day for 1 month. This is Sankirtan, Param Param Sankirtan, Sankirtan, Kirti. in mass, he's glorifying Radha and Krishna and teaching the Tattva Siddhanta and Leelas behind the whole, that it all leads to in the Rag Marg, the Mahant of Radhika, Srila Nathadas Bhavi Maharaj. So that's big Sankirtan. So this compassion is, it's Nand Goswami, he was like this. And we also do the same.
That's why we have that Guru Purnima, right?
Thank you. Because my mind, so many things going on in my mind. I want to show that's not. Thank you. because I'm old. I'm tired. Everything, and you're tired. So, and I'm excited because I like to speak Katha, and I like you, all of you. So then, I was saying, Sanatana Goswami was like the Mother Teresa for all the Vrijvasis, traveling all over the place. Rupa Goswami stayed with him, you know, here and there in Tergadam, and here and there, Seva Kunch, writing, doing his bhajan. Jiva Goswami just writing. He didn't have time to walk. Jiva Goswami didn't have time to walk. He was really writing. He was writing. And not only writing, but he also had to read a little bit. So he didn't just write all the Sandarbhas. There's like 500, 600 Shastras quoted there, which maybe they're all in his head, but I also think he had, you know, was also looking, you know. And that's why he says Nana Shastra Vicharanaika Nipanosa Dharma Sam. This is the praman for what I just said. Srinivas is saying Nana Shastra Vicharanaika Nipano Sadharma Samsta. The six Goswamis, many different Shastras, Nana Shastra Vichara. They study Vichara. Nana Shastra Vicharanaika Nipun. They were expert Nipun. Nana Shastra Vicharanaika Nipun. To establish the Sadharma, to establish the Gaudiya Dharma, Siddhanta Dharma of Bhakti Sandarbha, that's a massive study of lots of Shastras. And it's, you see in there what's all in there, especially Bhagavatam, quoted everywhere. That's the Amalam Puranam. So Sanatana Goswami is glorified as Mother Teresa, and the Vrijvasis, they so much respect him and honored him because he was compassionate. Not because he was giving them Bhagavatam classes or leading any Sankirtan, because he just helped them and he guided them and he loved them and he served them and showed his compassion for Vrijvasis. And he's a Raghunugacharya on Gaudiya Vaishnava line. So much they honor them that when it comes Guru Purnima, we say Vyas Purnima, Guru Purnima, that for the last 500 years in Braj Mandal and also in a Hindi Pancham, Brajbhumika Pancham, you know, in Hindi. It calls this day, it doesn't even call it Guru Purnima. It calls it Guru Purnima. It says Mudiya. It's called, everyone in Brajmandal calls it Mudiya Purnima. Mudiya means shaved head.
Shaved head Mudiya.
Shaved head Purnima. You know, your head looks like the moon. Your head's all shaved up. And they named that, the entire Brajmandal still remembers one sadhu. Why do they remember him? Because he was a Kirtanacharya, the emperor of Kirtan? No. Because he was a rustic lecturer and he had a great voice and sang bhajans? No. Because he showed compassion to Vrijvasis. So see how there's, here compassion is perfect, but other compassion is against your rag marg. So see how you have to have, you know, it's like bhakti is like a razor's edge, you know? Isn't it
beautiful? You have a clear concept of how and how you really go. I mean, every time you follow that, there's an acceleration of the mood. So it's like,
yeah, this is a nice thing. It's amazing. You see how compassion over here is not good for bhakti, but for Raghunuga bhakti. Compassion here is very good. She says, wait a minute, you know, one time you say compassion is not good, one time compassion is good. So it's like you have to. Once they were at a morning walk in L.A. I was on a few morning walks with Prabhupada. And then they said, Prabhupada, no, we're really distributing a lot of books. As Los Angeles is distributing thousands of books like anything. And I was a book distributor. So we were all there with Prabhupada. So it seems like, you know, pretty soon, you know, the way we're distributing books and, you know, we have these big Rath Yatras and so much prasad, Krishna consciousness is going to take over the world. And Prabhupada was, no. No. It was 1976. We were 24 years old. We were like really fired up. We were like, yeah, we're gonna. We. I remember we used to go on out on there'd be some new skyscraper coming up in LA on the side of the Venice Boulevard or something, and it was a hospital, it was like 25 story hospital or something. I said, "Hey Prabhu, look at that. You know, in a few years, we're going to have a brahmachari ashram like that. We're going to build, you know, we're making so many devotees. See, that's 25-story building. We can have like 1,000 brahmacharis. We're going to have a brahmachari ashram like that. We're going so big." This is how positive, you know, we're crazy. If you look back, it's, you know, but we were so positive that we were really going to take over. You know, that building's coming, we're going to have our airplanes and everything, you know. So then they asked Prabhupada and Marty Mark, "Is Krishna consciousness going to take over the world?" And Prabhupada said, "No." He said, "Well, Prabhupada, what do you mean? I thought it was going to go to every town and village. Every town and village, people are going to hear Gauranga's name." And he was just quiet. And then he said, "Krishna consciousness is only for the intelligent.
It's not for everybody."
Very good. And you see, practically speaking, there's 7 billion people in the world. How many people are even remotely, faintly Krishna conscious?
Very rare.
Very rare. What does it say? Bahonam Janmanam. What does Krishna say in Gita? 7:19 Gita. Bahonam Janmanam Ante Gyanavam Maham Prapadyante Vasudeva Sarvam Iti Samadhana Sudurlaba. Sudurlaba. First is Laba, then is Durlaba. Sudurlaba.
Really good.
Lava means love means to attain. Greed, lubda. And Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is lubda. This is the quality for Ragmara, greed. And dur means far, difficult. Very, 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 very difficult to attain. Then Sue means very, very difficult. You know, like 5,000 people joined and got initiated with Prabhupada. I was one of the lucky, fortunate ones. And 4,000 are blooped. Gone. 1,000 left. So 1 out of 5, or yeah, whatever. 20%. So it's like, you know, the one ten thousandth of the percentage of the population that becomes devotees of Krishna, whatever that, something like that, or whatever it is, whatever. Just to give you some hypothetical number. It's not much. It's maybe 100,000 out of 8 billion, whatever it is. Then of those, only of those few, which is nothing, only 20% make it
to the last.
You're Russian devotees. You're new devotees. Now you stay for 10 or 20 years and look back and see how many people are still here that were there when you joined.
Sure.
I mean, Western people. Indians, it's another thing. Indians, they don't join. They're already joined. They don't have to join Krishna consciousness. You know, Prabhupada said India is already Krishna conscious. They just need a reminder. That's, you know, Bharata Bhumate Hoile Manasa Janma Jara Janma Sartaka Kari Parakupakar. He said, if you're born in Bharat, you're not only Krishna conscious, you're Guru. Mm-hmm. Well, wait. Open this one and reach out. Open this one. Pull it toward you. That's good timing. hurry up. Close. We saved you for Prasadam, so you're just in time for Prasadam. You're like the